You're listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental.
How are you feeling after that, Matt?
I feel a lot better than Bob.
Extra Time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Get lost. Get lost.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Ow, from Brooklyn, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental. I am Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, Chima Davies, Chuck D, David Goss, Matt Doyle on very little sleep because he's slaving away for you in this quarantine. I just want everybody out there to know that. Doyle will let you know, but I figured that I would
appreciate
let
that.
You know that the conscience train just never stops rolling, Doyle. So go ahead, do your promo off the top. What 9,000 word thing did you
what
write
am I,
last
an amateur?
Night about?
It actually hit 11,000, Weavey.
Oh my god!
So Bill Barnwell last week for ESPN did the 100 best Premier League transfers of all time, which was absolutely fantastic. And you should read everything Bill writes about soccer. I don't care about his NFL stuff, but whatever. So I stole that idea, except they didn't do rankings because rankings are too hard. So I just did the four different buckets, basically, of MLS imports all time. And I ended up coming up with the 94 best MLS imports ever. Guys who were like budget, like Marcelo Sarvas level transfers to everything, David Beckham, Miguel Almiron, everything in between. It is literally one of the most fun pieces I have ever written because I got to go in the time machine all the way back to 96 and make stops. Basically, all points from there to here. It was a lot, but I'm actually pretty happy with this one. That it is not... Yeah,
I don't even think I need to read it at this point, right? I mean, I just got that feels like I just experienced it. If you do want to read it, MLSsoccer.com, of course, we know you have some time. We're all dealing with the same thing here, which is how to be productive, how to survive, how to stay happy and sane in these difficult times. Just a reminder, as we prepare to revisit history, we're going to go back to 98 on this show, Chicago Fire, and then the Seattle Sounders as well for our Mount Rushmores. Peter Wilt will join us. He was the GM and president of the Fire in those early days, those very successful days. And Brad Evans, a Sounders legend, if there ever was one, will join us to help figure out that Mount Rushmore. But the reminder, social distance, do your part. Help us all get through this. We hope you're feeling good. We hope that you're okay. We hope your health and the health of your family and your friends is good, that you're not suffering. But let's get into it. Let's not talk about suffering before we get to Wilt, before we get to Brad Evans. I saw a meme going around, Dave, that if I had your name written on it, it was the five most memorable games that you've been to in person. And there's nothing that I would like to do more right now as I'm locked into my house forever and ever than to sit down for a beer with you and just like ask you to tell me soccer stories. So you have the floor. What are the five most memorable David Goss soccer matches of all time?
So I just want you to know, you mentioned pain. This was extremely painful for me to try and create, like, the leave off some of these babies, some of these great experiences. So just so you know and feel good, you caused me extreme discomfort over the last 24 hours.
Yes, that is exactly what I wanted.
This. So I've got an MLS list. I've got a World Cup list. I've got USMNT, all this stuff. But
did you rank them? Or did you?
I did rank them. So fifth, we're going to start at five. We're going to go back to March 20th, 2010, in Newark and Harrison, New Jersey, for the Red Bull Arena opener against Santos. The PATH station hadn't opened yet, so you had to take the train into Newark. And then what we were all so excited about, the march to the stadium through the Portuguese neighborhood for a Brazilian club, and you had Santos flags out, and people were like so pumped. This is the future of soccer. We're going to march to every game. No one does that anymore. A guy named Neymar was playing for Santos on the other side, as well as Alexandro, both who went on to start
the World
Cup. A guy named
Mike Petke was playing for the Red Bulls, though.
And Dan Richards and the Estonian Hagi. Joel Linpair lifting it up. But I literally took a bus down from Boston for that game. I was living in Boston at the time. I'd never been to a soccer-specific stadium in North America. I'd been going to Giant Stadium for about 6 years at that point. I'd been going to Revs games at Gillette. I was so excited. I was so ready. So I took the bus down for the weekend. None of my friends understood why I was going. My one friend who had season tickets for now at this point 20 years couldn't go, gave us his tickets. We went, The stadium was perfect. The atmosphere was perfect. The potential, the idea of what the future was going to be was amazing. So that's my number five.
Hold on, one note. I never pegged you for a March to the Match guy. You know, I always thought you were kind of, you know, after all that FC Cincinnati talk.
I was marching to the games before you were born.
Wow.
Mustache was even in the future. I was doing the march to the game.
This mustache was not possible in 2010. So, fair.
Impossible in 2020. If you're being honest. So I tried to break it up, and I did different moments. So I didn't want to do multiple MLS openings, stadium openings, stuff like that. So the next one I went was foreign club game, and it was a toss-up, one in Italy, one in England. And I finished with the 2017 championship promotion game at Wembley, Reading versus Huddersfield. It was a terrible game, awful game. But we spent about 4.5 hours outside drinking with Reading fans before, because we bought random tickets and they were in the Reading section. And you roll into any Reading section, just go Bobby Convy and Marcus Hanneman, and you are like that all of a sudden. And we kept asking people, are you allowed to drink outside? And they were like, no, but it's Wembley, so yes. Which apparently is a rule in England. Spent about 4.5 hours with those fans. Went in. I think it went to penalty kicks, so 120 minutes in the sun. Up top at Wembley with flags. It was beautiful environment, beautiful atmosphere. So that one won out over Roma Lazio in Italy because their fans are a little bit too much at times. Number three was a tie. Can I do that?
I mean, I guess.
It was between Portugal 2014 World Cup in Manaus, which was the best atmosphere I was at that World Cup. I think that city was the best stadium, the best fan base from locals. And USA Mexico Dos Aceros going into that World Cup when Clint Dempsey purchased the penalty kick to keep the legend of Dos Aceros alive. Shout out, Clint, baby! Deuce for life!
Those were two on my list, so I'm glad that you knocked them off so that way I don't have to say them. Manaus was amazing, though, right? By the way. You're just like, you fly into the middle of the rainforest and it's just nothing but, you know, the Amazon and just green everywhere. And I remember beforehand we were doing like a tour of all the sort of like iconic Amazon Manaus things. And like I was supposed to jump into the river with the pink river dolphins and they were going to film it. And I've never been so happy that we were running late that I got to skip that because I was terrified. And Nick Furshaw was just having so much fun with the fact that he was going to throw me into the Amazon River with pink bottlenose dolphins that looked like freak show aliens. I still feel anxiety about that moment. Continue. That was a tie at three, and both of those were incredible. What was number two?
2018 World Cup. I had three matches that were outrageous in terms of atmosphere and event, but I landed on Argentina, Nigeria. Because if you've ever been around a legit Argentina crowd, it blows everything else out of the water. Singing for hours and hours, chants, flags, the way they get into it. We had experienced them in Moscow like 2 weeks before, not around a game, in the street. And they sang for about 5.5 hours and drank on the street in Moscow. And so to go to that game, it felt like it was the only World Cup atmosphere I've been in where it felt like you were in a home country and you weren't. The way they invaded it. And then I was sitting next to the Nigeria club, like front office, all their section. So when they scored to go tied, which meant they were going through, they were kissing the floor around me and hugging me and all that stuff. And then Messi scores one of the greatest goals I've ever been around. And then they get a winner in the 84th minute. And the stadium was probably dancing for 2 hours after the game. It was one of the best things I've ever been around. And I can still picture the white that the whole stadium was covered in, with the flags coming down and everyone in their jerseys. And then number one, which made this great because it is an MLS moment, but it is actually probably one of the coolest events I've ever been to, was the TFC Chivas CCL final at Chivas, at Estadio Akron, to go into the Lion's Den. It's in a valley. It takes an hour to get there from the city, and the whole time you're just hearing honking and fans are out. And this was hours before the game. You get into the stadium, and it was like what you picture in a South American atmosphere, with the banners coming full supporter section top to bottom and just floating as the fans dance for hours before the game. You know, 45,000 plus, the event, the way the game played out. Unfortunate with the result, but the beer being thrown post-game, internet not working, looking like I'm falling off the side of the planet in a Skype going back to New York. It was amazing. It was everything I like in soccer. I was repping MLS. On foreign shores, the fans were perfect. The atmosphere was wild. The game made no sense. So that's probably my number one.
Love that CCL fever hit the number one there. Love that. I think maybe at Olympique for me, America, yeah. Montreal, that would be in my conversation to go to the 2014 World Cup. I would throw out two games. I was at the opener, Brazil, Croatia, and that everything leading up to that match was just kind of spellbinding. Like being in Sao Paulo, having it be Brazil, having it be the opener, just trying to get into the stadium and walk through like 2 miles of shoulder to shoulder people just getting, just partying there. They're partying a lot. We'll just put it that way. The other nominee before I get to mine, my one, because we don't have time for five for each of us, was at that same World Cup, Luis Suarez and Uruguay against England. And there was something about it there, just like a sort of a consternation, but an admiration between the two sides. And the Uruguay fans are incredible as well. But my number one has got to be the Sanssouci game in Panama, U.S. Panama. It was me and Roger Bennett. We were the only journalists there, like American journalists, at least. The stadium, Rommel Fernandez is just, it's absolutely packed. Panama's thinking we're going to make it. It's up and down. You can hear every time Mexico goes down in the crowd. They're throwing beers in the air. They're celebrating as if a goal was scored in the stadium. Of course, it hadn't been. They get that late goal from the substitute. Man, I can't remember who scored the goal at this point. He's the legend, like the nine that they brought in on the Tejada, and he celebrated for like 15 minutes. Like it was a, it took forever.
That's the only U.S. goal I've ever booed. And then I didn't want the U.S. Sanssouci to get a result in that game. I didn't want, wanted Mexico to miss the World Cup so bad.
We couldn't believe it either. Nobody had, it was so close. And I still have the howler, Sanssouci kicking the, the flotation device to the sinking El Tri ship. I mean, you just couldn't believe that it actually happened. And everybody who walked out of that stadium, you just felt like they were shell shocked. They didn't know what to do. They couldn't figure it out. I saw the security guard next to us who was kind of guarding our press box, which was just, like the really cheap chairs that you might throw on your college patio and somebody's going to stand on it or sit on it and break it. You just know it. It's just me and Roger basically in the stands. I turned to this guy after U.S. scores and he's literally crying. He's completely stoic, but he's crying. And that emotionally, that game was a blender that I don't think I'll ever replicate. So just thinking about that, man, I wish we didn't have to think about these moments, but it's fun to do so. Charlie, how about you, man? What's the number one memorable one that you did not play in? Don't try to flex on us, okay? No flexing. All right.
Well, I think you would have known if I had played in the ultimate game was playing in Azteca. I mean, it doesn't get better than that. But the best game I've been to that I haven't played in would be Chelsea at Manchester United, Old Trafford in 2010. Drogba got the game winner in the 79th minute, I believe. And it was my first time watching a game. I had been there as a youth. I went over touring and we got to tour the stadium, which was awesome. But this was the first time I got a general chance to experience Old Trafford. I sat with the Chelsea fans because Ashley Cole was the one who got me the tickets. We had done rehab together probably a month prior to that in France. So he got me tickets. I went with my brother. I was staying at Stu Holden's place. It was just the whole build up to the game. We had dinner with Ashley. And then, getting to see Old Trafford and just take it all in. And then Drogba scores the game winner with the Chelsea fans. It was a pretty cool experience.
Couldn't be one he played in, but he had to go first name basis on Adidas. Fine.
Just him and Ash.
Doyle, finish it off for us. We'll get Peter Wilton here to talk Chicago Fire.
First of all, shouts to Gasman for the Red Bull Arena opener. That was a hell of a time. There's a couple that came to mind. Italy versus Ireland, 94 World Cup at Giant Stadium. It's a terrible game, but the atmosphere, especially from the Irish fans, was it was amazing. Were you there for that one, David?
No, but Ireland played like 4 years in a row, like garbage non-FIFA friendlies at Giant Stadium in the mid-2000s.
Okay. Yeah.
And I took the bus from Port Authority to everyone. Underage, didn't matter to the Irish, and they were the best atmosphere.
It was fun.
Time.
It was incredible in the world, and especially they beat Italy. And now, granted, Italy were actually terrible that World Cup, and Baggio completely carried them, but it felt like I don't know, felt like a watershed moment for Irish soccer. It turned out not to be, though.
I was one of the kids. I was one of the kids after that World Cup that went and got the Roberto Baggios and wore them until they absolutely fell off my feet.
Dude's a legend. The Beckham game at Giant Stadium in 2007, which we actually just showed recently on MLS Classics on our YouTube channel. That for an MLS crowd, that was the first time I was at an MLS crowd that was wild. That felt like a party. It felt like a World Cup game in a lot of ways. And of course, the game itself was incredible. But I'm actually going to shout out an emotional game that I went to. USA versus Costa Rica, RFK, right after Charlie got hurt. The final game of 2010 World Cup qualifying. It was an ugly, ugly night in terms of the weather. And like, it was awful. It felt awful in the fan base because we were all so concerned about Charlie. And then we went down 2-0 real fast. Gooch gets hurt, but they came back and they got the 2-0, and it ended up being a weird, so, like, it wasn't a joyous thing, but it was like, okay, we made the World Cup and these two guys are hurt now. But it was like this really weirdly kind of like almost somber unifying moment for the fan base, and one I'll never forget.
One Honduran fans will never forget either.
Yeah, that Hondurans, because Hondurans got... Did Honduras get eliminated?
Sans Johnny. No, they got
in. They got
in,
right?
Yeah. Johnny,
and Costa Rica got eliminated with the result. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm still surprised that at some point Johnny Bornstein hasn't, you know, with all his, like, traveling around the world to play soccer, that Olympia just hasn't been like, bro, we'll pay you all the money in the world. Johnny's come home, Johnny.
He gets 20 articles once a year in Honduras.
Yes.
Everyone interviews him. Once
you'd be shocked. He should be like selling something. He should have promotional money coming in. Yeah. All right. Time to talk MLS history. That was fun. That was fun. Good memories, guys. If you have games that you have been to that you think are memorable or that we would have fun reminiscing about, or you just want to tell the story, 401-206-0MLS, extra time at MLSsoccer.com. Let's get to Peter Wilt and Mount Rushmore for the Chicago Fire.
It's great to be here. Thanks for doing this. Thanks for keeping the sport and the league alive during the pandemic.
Yeah, man, alive in the past. It's fun to reminisce a little bit. Let's just go back before we start doing the Mount Rushmore with you, because I'm sure you're very opinionated on that particular topic and who maybe belongs there. Tell me about building this club from scratch.
It was an amazing experience. I mean, for myself personally, I'd started Minnesota Thunder before that, but it's so different. With Minnesota, we had two full-time employees. I get into Chicago and I'm charged with putting together this major league team. We had a staff of close to 30 people, full-timers, which is small by today's standards. And it was an expansion team. And doing so in some ways maybe helped because the expectations were low. No one expects expansion teams to win. But Chicago, obviously being an international city and cosmopolitan city, was really hungry for a professional soccer team and very open and accepting to it. And I got a lot of help from people wanting to share best practices and maybe unknowingly worst practices, which unfortunately I got a lot of that. But you learn from people's mistakes as well over time. And we did some really good things. In particular, we hired some good people for this topic, not the least of which was Bob Bradley. You know, Bob, I gave him his first professional head coaching job. He'd been an assistant with DC United. And DC was the one team I learned best practices from. I went on a tour of all the MLS teams, or it was 10 of them at the time. And I literally learned what not to do from 9 of the 10 teams. It was DC United that, and Kevin Payne's leadership that taught me what to do. They, in the first 2 years, and the reason I think they were so dominant in those early years is that they recognized it was incumbent upon themselves to look for players and to run things the way they saw fit. You know, the letters MLS in the early years facetiously stood for more or less senile. And too many teams, I think, kind of laid back and waited for the league office to provide direction or assistance in putting their team together. DC United was proactive. They went out, they signed their own players, or they looked for their own players. And when I saw that, I recognized that someone from that Bruce Arena tree needed to be our leader, and that was Bob.
Yeah, he brought in some great players. You guys were not lacking in talent. Let's kind of run through here, and I'm just going to throw out the first name that popped into my mind that had to be on the Mount Rushmore for the Fire of the Pantheon, and that's Peter Novak. And I was shocked because we put out the, hey, Fire fans, who would you have? And maybe other people are chiming in, but I didn't see that many Peter Novaks. Would he make it for you, Peter? Is he a shoe-in?
Yeah, he is a shoe-in. He's the only one that is a shoe-in, and I've kind of done this exercise myself a few weeks ago or maybe a month ago. The Chicago Fire Mount Rushmore thread came through my Twitter feed without the restrictions of players only. And you know, spoiler alert, my four not using that restriction included Peter Novak. Phil Anschutz, you know, I think it's in some ways easy to overlook the owner because he's not front and center every day. But Phil Anschutz should not only be on the Chicago Fire Mount Rushmore if you're including non-players. He should be on the league's Mount Rushmore. So almost by that definition, he should be on the Fires as well. I had a fan, actually, Brandon Kitchens, who I had nominated to my fellow Ring of Fire members to be in the Ring of Fire. They unanimously voted him in. And unfortunately, ownership at the time, after Phil Anschutz rescinded the induction of Brandon Kitchens. He was a special person, a supporters group leader, a veteran, three tours of duty in the Middle East and Afghanistan, and lost his life actually once he was back home on a soccer field here. And he wrote the Stand and Deliver, which is the creed for Section 8 and Chicago Fire fans. And so he would be in my personal Ring of Fire. And then Bob Bradley would be in that Ring of Fire as well. But again, as players only, Peter Novak is the only one that I see should be a hands down, no doubt, Mount Rushmore. You know, I have a list of a couple dozen others that should get some sort of consideration. They have some merit to be in, but Peter is the only one that I would fall on the sword for and say he has to be on it.
Not Chris Armas? Yeah. Chris Armas is unanimous, man. He was 10 great years in Chicago, five-time best 11. Like, I think that's more than any other demon or every other demon in MLS history combined. Chris Armas has to be there. Unanimous.
Yeah, he'd be on my Mount Rushmore for sure. He's on it for players only. As far as a unanimous that I could see others making an argument for, I would say that, you know, Chris, because of his personality being kind of almost behind the scenes, not as outgoing as Peter Novak, I think I could see how some people wouldn't recognize. I mean, when Chris played, he was actually one of the most underrated players in Major League Soccer. And I would still claim to this day, despite the All-Star nominations and such, he still is an underrated player. He was the Fire's team captain after Peter Novak. I mean, those two historically are the two captains of the Chicago Fire. So, yeah, Chris gets my check off as well on a players only Mount Rushmore.
Peter, give me your best Peter Novak story that sort of represents why he is for you the one, so to speak. Because there are people out there that are like, oh, Peter Novak, 98 Fire. You know, I'm new to the league, or I wasn't born even maybe. Help people connect with Peter Novak.
Yeah, some of it is well, it's away from the field. First off, how he came to be on the Chicago Fire. He wasn't recruited by Sunil. He wasn't initially recruited by me or by Bob. Peter recruited MLS. Peter recruited Chicago. He saw he kind of had a falling out with Munich 1860, decided he needed a new start on his career. And so he researched the world of where vacation in Florida. He knew the United States. And he saw that MLS had started, and he saw Chicago was going to have a team. He knew about the Polish population in Chicago. So he reached out to us. He was an early adopter of the internet and online communication, and he reached out to me, to Bob, to Sunil. Shep Messing represented him in the early years, and proactively came to us. And I think that is something special when a player is reaching out to be with you. And another story about Peter is actually Chris Armas's. You know, and it's, you know, Chris would always say that the training sessions were more difficult than the games because of Peter. Peter was fierce, ferocious in training sessions, competitive to the nth degree. And that carried over to every player on that team. And then so by the time that the games came, Chris said the games were easy, much less competitive than actually the training sessions.
That back line, man, it's going to be tough. We were debating before we jumped on here. You have Lewis Kubik, of course, who won a couple of Defender of the Year awards. You've got Carlos Bocanegra, who came in and did the same thing before rolling on to Europe. But I have a hard time, in my mind, separating C.J. Brown from this Mount Rushmore, this pantheon, because of the longevity, because of what he meant. And we've talked a lot about, on this show and these debates, sort of the soul of clubs. If you had to pick a defender, who's it going to be of those three?
Yeah, C.J. Brown, for the reasons you gave. And C.J. is comparable in this discussion to Chris Armas. He also is, you know, off the field, a bit of a laid-back, reserved individual. He's not that outgoing, self-promoting person that's going to get the limelight. But, boy, he was on the field, competitive, hard worker, tough as nails. No one in the league wanted to face him. And longevity and his commitment to the community – serving on the Chicago Fireworks for Kids Foundation Board of Directors for almost a generation, is working in the communities. You know, it's trite, but the signing autographs, first one on, last one off, he was there. No one in the Chicago youth soccer community hadn't met C.J. Brown and loved him. And Carlos, great player, but 4 years and gone. Lubos Kubik, 3 years and gone. Lubos, by the way, is my favorite player of all time with the Fire. But, yeah, his tenure wasn't long enough.
I need that explanation right now, Peter. Why? Why is Lubos your favorite?
Oh, in part because we both have Czech heritage, his more closely than mine. And in large part, an unbelievable player. You know, he played in the 1990 World Cup for Czechoslovakia as a playmaker. And then he, in his first year, really as a full-time defender, he wins MLS Defender of the Year. And yeah, his free kicks were amazing. And his, you know, really playing a sweeper role for the Fire was special. And he was so skillful on the ball. You know, he'd hold on to the ball longer than a fan would be comfortable with, but he never lost it. And just such a good guy, a genuinely good guy. So I'll always love Lubos.
What did it mean to you, Peter, to win that first MLS Cup in the first year against DC United, no less?
Yeah, that was pretty special. So a quick story, when I was making my tour of MLS teams and learning what to do and what not to do, and I got to Redskin Park, where DC United trained. Kevin Payne introduced me to Bruce Arena. I'd met Bruce before. He didn't remember me, didn't know who I was. Kevin explained to him that this is Peter Wilt. He's going to be leading the new team in Chicago. Bruce, as only Bruce can do, tips his head back, kind of looks down his nose a bit and says, "Chicago, eh? It'll never work." So, and I love Bruce and respect him, but I remember that. And so, you know, whatever it was, a year and a couple months later, when we won the championship at the Rose Bowl over DC United, it had maybe a little bit of extra specialness to it.
What was the post game like? I always need to know these things. Come on, you just beat DC your first year. Who's driving the party? Where was the party? How long did the party go?
The parts I remember were actually at the Rose Bowl. And maybe parts of it is memories of memories, because you see photographs. But on the field was just pure joy with the players and the coaches celebrating, and, you know, 50,000 plus fans in the stands, a beautiful sunny day, and holding that trophy. That original MLS Cup trophy was heavy, solid metal. If you ever have a chance to hold up one of DC's first couple of trophies, or our trophy in 98, be prepared, hold it by both handles, and don't let go, because it'll hurt someone if it falls, as it did in the locker room afterwards. I was also real excited that in the locker room we were able to bring our staff in. Our staff was amazing. You know, people always remember the team on the field, but that year we had so many young, talented people that would go on to become general managers, directors of business operations, big time PR people, all this in the front office staff, and young, all in their 20 somethings, maybe a few 30 somethings. In the locker room, there's, you know, there's 30 of us staff who on game day don't normally get to celebrate, drink champagne, have fun, and just going crazy. And someone, I don't know who, dropped the MLS Cup trophy, and it landed, glanced off the head of one of our female staff members, and knocked her to the ground. She was okay, but stunned for a little bit. And then I think it's safe to say by the end of the night, the parties was just back at the team hotel. There were a lot of people who were, shall I say, stunned as well.
Well, I'm glad she was all right. But Peter, before we get to number four, a lot of discussion has gone into who was the best fire team of all time. 98, they won the MLS Cup. But in 2000 and 2003, they both got to the MLS Cup. They won U.S. Open Cups. In your mind, what was the best squad?
Yeah, 98 also won the Open Cup, by the way. So that was the double. And you're right, everyone – not everyone. Many people think of 98 as the best team of all time. The Fire's best team was 2000. It was essentially the 98 team. Plus you add Christo Stoichkov, Dima Kovalenko, DeMarcus Beasley, Carlos Bocanegra, and Josh Wolf for the whole year. 98, Josh came in towards the end, but he had developed and aged a bit. So that 2000 team should not have lost MLS Cup. You know, when I'm being a little bit bitter, I'll say Paul Tamburino, the referee, cost us that one. Tony Miola really cost it. He had a great game. One of the best games ever by a goalkeeper. Albeit we did hit a lot of Adam balls, but he played really well. It was one of three rings Tony has taken off my fingers in his career. He beat my Minnesota Thunder in the 1995 USISL Championship, which was the last pro game, outdoor game in America played before MLS started. He beat the Fire in 2000 MLS Cup. And then 2004, also with Kansas City, they beat the Fire in the Open Cup final.
Tell me how you feel as you go through that, because when I was looking back at the history, and sometimes for me, and I think for others, it can be easy to forget about the relative dominance of the Fire at that time. We always talk about DC and their first dynasty and what they mean to this league. Your Fire teams, Bob's Fire teams, and then on to sort of different management, different players. I mean, you had an opportunity to be that dynasty, to be on the same footing as DC United, and just the finals didn't quite go your way, at least MLS Cup-wise. Is there any sort of... Yeah. Regret about that? Do you ever think, man, people should just remember these Fire teams a little different?
A little bit. When I traded Bob to the Metro Stars at his request after 2002, you know, we had a real good heart-to-heart conversation about the move. I wanted him to stay, and he wanted to go back home, and I totally understood that. And, you know, in the conversation, he told me that he regrets that we didn't win one or two more MLS Cups. So we really should have won one or two more. And I think he's right. But whenever you look back at something like that, you have to remember it goes both ways. You can argue that DC United should have won the 98 MLS Cup. They were a very good team, you know, arguably better than us. The Fire did not win the Supporters' Shield in 98. We got Heim and well-coached, and we played smart and beat a really good team on October 25th, 1998. 2003, which is actually moving into the Dave Sarakin era, we won a double. We won the Supporters' Shield and the Open Cup. But I'll say we blew the MLS Cup, which is maybe a little bit harsh. But Ante was sick, very sick, up all night with the flu the night before. And it showed in his game. We kind of lost concentration after getting back in the game on a goal and then gave one back to Landon late. So that one, I feel we should have won. Yeah, 2000, we should have won. But maybe some of the Open Cups as well. The game at Giants Stadium, Open Cup Championship in 03, when Bob was coaching the Metro Stars and Dave was coaching us, we won on Damani Ralph's goal. That, you know, on the bulk of the play, maybe New York should have won that game, but they didn't score a goal and we did. That's soccer.
That is soccer. Let's get your fourth here. I think we have, and correct me if I'm wrong, Peter Novak, we have CJ Brown, we have Chris Armas, and now you have a laundry list of guys who could and maybe should be there. You could go to, we kind of went through Boca, we kind of went through Kubik, you've got DeMarcus, you've got Mike McGee, maybe Wolf, Thornton, Chris Schweinsteiger, Blanco, Qua, and then Razov's a big one too. He's still the leading scorer. Who are you putting number four, Peter, on the Chicago Fire Mount Rushmore?
Yeah, it's a tough one. And, you know, two that I want to make sure that we talk about are the all-time leading goal scorer, and that's Ante Razov, and the all-time best goalkeeper is Zach Thornton. Zach would look imposing on that mount, and I don't think we'd win those titles in the early years without him. So I'm going to put Zach Thornton on the Mount Rushmore.
I love it.
Because I don't want to be the one to tell Zach he's not
on. We're just going to need to ship in some extra stone from Italy or something like that just to build out the shoulders.
Carving, you're adding.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Peter Wilt, president. GM of those early years of the Fire. Before I let you go, Peter, I mean, I'm curious what you're up to now. I know you were doing some work with USL. You were with Forward Madison before that, building a wildly entertaining club and squad. What's going on now in your life?
Yeah. Well, at the moment, my position with USL is on pause. So I'm cleaning out my basement and going through a lot of old memories down there. When USL starts back up with games, I'll be back to assisting new markets and existing teams develop their supporters culture.
That sounds awesome. So you sound like the right man to do it. Thank you so much, Peter, for reminiscing a little bit with us, sharing your glory years with the Fire, and we'll try to see. I mean, I guess we can't really go against Peter with our Mount Rushmore, but maybe we'll debate that when we get off. Thank you, man.
Take care, guys.
Big thanks to Peter Wilt for joining us. That's an AT&T call to the field. A little reminiscing on a team that some people may not remember the glory years from. You remember, though, Doyle, if I'm not mistaken, you made a funny face when we were talking about that Open Cup final win against Bob Bradley and the Metro Stars. Did you not?
Yeah, it was 2003. I remember that game not fondly at all because there were about 3,000 of us in the stands at, 70,000-seat Giant Stadium. It was like a miserable late October night, and it was a cup final. It was a cup final, and there was nobody there, and it made you despair, especially when I was a Metro Stars fan, and they played pretty awful soccer that game, and I'm not sure either team deserved to win, but of course Metro lost, and it was kind of bittersweet for me because, as Peter said, it was Damani Ralph who got the goal, and Damani Ralph was a UConn guy, so I was like weirdly happy, but not at all. Just to juxtapose that Giant Stadium soccer experience with the one I had 9 years before with Italy versus Ireland, and then the one I would have a few years later with the Beckham game in 2007, it was weird. And I think it speaks a lot to, I wish I had a better way to explain it, but it speaks a lot to like how far the league and the fan bases came, specifically in that 2006 to 2010 era, when MLS really started finding itself and recovering from the contraction of the Florida teams, and expansion started happening, and expansion, not just, you know, sort of for expansion's sake, but like really targeted, you know, we saw what happened in Toronto and then Seattle, and then everybody forgets about Philly, but what the Sons of Ben did. But yeah, that 2003 U.S. Open Cup was a low point in a lot of ways.
And any chance we have to have Doyle reminisce on low points or have Caitlin Carr talk about MLS Cup, we definitely do it. Let's try to settle this here, because Peter went Zach Thornton. I think it's a great call. But I think a lot of people are going to disagree. Do we have any disagreement on the top three? Can we settle Novak, Armas, and CJ Brown? Is that settled? Yep. We got Goss nodding. We got Charlie in. Doyle,
yeah, I'm good
do you
with
feel
that.
Good about that? Okay, so how about number four? Anybody for Zach Thornton, or are there different names? Charlie, you're shaking your head.
Yeah, I think Zach Thornton was an incredible pro, one of the – for me, the most recognizable goalies in MLS, and especially during his time. I mean, big enforcer, huge, just massive. He won those MLS contests when you shoot the fastest, you know, the hardest. It was Zach Thornton. He could launch those goal kicks all the way to the opposing 6-yard box. You know, he's one of the most recognizable Chicago Fire players. But I think when you're talking about Pantheon, the top of the top, you have to think Cuauhtémoc Blanco. I mean, he was the reason they had their first ever jersey sponsor in Best Buy. It was him. You had the Beckham signing, and then Chicago Fire splashed in their own way, and they signed Cuauhtémoc Blanco. But it was the way he played. He was a global superstar, but with Mexico, he was, you know, the guy that we all hated, because he could produce moments of magic, and he was never going to beat you with speed and pace. It was more trickery. It was unbalancing defenders by, you know, taking the right angle, getting you wrong footed, and then curling in a ball, set pieces. He led the team in assists in 2008, I believe. That was his best 11 year. But it wasn't that he was blowing you away with performances. It was more what he meant to the club, what he meant to the fans. How he pulled all the Latinos in that area to the stadium. It was one of those players that doesn't come along too often. And I think for that reason, he was able to pack stadiums and
what did he win?
He's got to be on the Pantheon.
What did he win again?
He's the mayor, baby.
He didn't win anything. He didn't win anything, but he won the hearts of many fans in the Chicago area.
Very poetic from Charlie right there. You know? I mean, he's impossible to forget, right? I mean, this is sort of the era that I came in and became obsessed with MLS. And you remember the bunny hops, but maybe more than that, I remember the like run up to free kicks. Just like this like anticipation moment. It takes forever. It takes forever. It takes forever. It takes forever. Magic. You know, Kalen talks about how he changed the club and all that. And also Kalen has got some good Zach Thornton stories, by the way, as well. I think Kwa's a great shout. I'm wondering how Ante Razov hasn't really got as much love as I maybe would have expected him to, given what he meant to those early championship teams and how many goals he scored.
Started all three MLS Cups for the team, as well as the win in 98. All-time leading goal scorer in the club's history, and was there from 98 through that, what we're talking about, this period of success for Chicago. CJ didn't start all the MLS Cups. Thornton and Armas did. So Razov's in that conversation. And I think for me, I love pure goal scorers, pure finishers. And he was that player. It wasn't always build up or creativity or floating out wide. It was being deadly in the box and didn't have a 25 goal season. It doesn't get put up there, but ended his career as a top. What was he? Three at the time, all-time MLS goal list.
Went hard on to and do. Scored
goals actually hard for Chivas after that under Bob Bradley. Yeah. Hard to do. So I think Ante Razov goes on that list. He's part of the Ring of Fire, leading goal scorer still now for the club. And those are not easy things to find. So I put him on that list. I think Thornton's a good shout for what he did for the club, the consistency, best goalkeeper of all time. And I understand for what Charlie's saying. You know, for Temo's time period, he was the face of the team. And from when Razov left, for example, and the team was no longer good, till now, he was probably the best face that they had and one of the best periods that they had. So I understand the shout there, but I think it's Ante.
And they were like almost. That was an almost team. Like they got to the conference finals, couldn't get over the hump. They had a ton of great players, couldn't get over the hump. Qua was the big one for them, couldn't get over the hump. You have to also mention here, before we kind of get Doyle to maybe settle this thing for us. I mean, Bastian Schweinsteiger, legend. He's not going to get close because he
not
didn't
even
win.
Close.
Mike McGee won an MVP. You know,
So Mike McGee had the single most magical year. Like that was his only double digit scoring year. He won MVP. He was awesome. He's not really in the discussion here, but if there's like a pantheon of all time great fire seasons, he's like near the top.
Well,
even
look,
though
that team
didn't even make the playoffs and he still won MVP.
So you have all these different spots, and obviously it's the Bob Bradley observation deck. You know, Frank Klopas hasn't really got a shot here. He just didn't play long enough, but for the club overall, he has such a big spot. So you have to honor him some way.
The shout Mike for McGee. Longtime soldiers for this club, because the problem is CJ and Armas are the longtime guys and the great guys. So none of these guys are going to get on there, but Chris
Logan
Ross,
Paws.
Logan Paws, Jesse Marsh, and Gonzalo Sagares were guys that just were around forever. You could say Jesse probably, or Rolf maybe, was the elite at the levels at times of that group. And Charlie mentioned it, but Logan Paws, literally over 200 appearances, like they're forever consistent starter. But when you have CJ and Armas, it's impossible to put those guys in the list.
Well, 296 is a big number. I mean, 296 appearances.
Yeah.
You got to be on the pantheon.
Yeah. Doyle, are you going to help us out here?
Yeah. I mean, I'll defer to Peter Wilt. If he says Zach Thornton, then I'll go with Zach Thornton.
The thing is, I'm not upset if it's if it's Razov, Thornton, or Blanco.
Yeah. I agree with that.
Because I think that you have a fair argument for each one.
I think there's a Twitter poll.
Yeah,
I think it is a Twitter poll.
I don't think we can decide this if we're all.
I agree.
I don't feel like I felt a responsibility to educate Charlie and help him.
I don't
him
think
be
this is a choice. Like, at what point are we going to learn that Twitter polls are just like popularity contests? What we have to do is
we have to
call Kalen Carr and we have to see what Kalen says later on this week.
Fan vote.
Carr right now is he's a little busy, or we would call him. He's in the middle of the Kick Around Live. That's every weekday at noon on Twitter. So right now it's Kalen Carr and Stephen Keel. And tomorrow is Kalen and David Goss. So tune into that on Twitter at noon every single day. Call Up also is premiering every Tuesday. So you get that tomorrow. And guess what? CJ Sapong is the guest this week from the Fire. And then also this week is MLS Unites to Inspire Kids. And Charlie and I are doing our best to inspire our own kids every single day. I don't know how you're doing it, Charlie, but I'm seemingly suffering. I'm just basically trying to hide new toys and reintroduce them to him every chance I can get. But MLSsoccer.com has more for you on how to educate and motivate kids with your educational and fitness wellness activities. Should we get to the Seattle Sounders? We'll call Kalen. We'll put the poll up.
We're putting this
figure this out.
Weeby, once you're in favor of democracy.
Okay. Yes, I am.
I heard Weeby.
Get him.
Weeby,
wow.
Weeby get the polls, but we're going to keep them open.
Oh,
thanks,
get him.
Charlie. Let's go, Charlie.
That's slander, and a Zoom court shall be convened at a later date.
Make Twitter Mount Rushmore polling a national holiday, Weeby. Do it now.
I'm fine with it. I don't want to work. All right, let's get to Brad Evans. He is on the line now. It's an AT&T call to the field. Brad, welcome to Extra Time.
What's up, guys? How are you?
Brad, is that doing your good? Kid screaming in the background?
That's definitely not my kid screaming. I love it.
It is. Yeah, it's so 12:35. Eastern. Let's see. I'm trying to determine. Translate through the door. I'm
it's
guessing
lunchtime.
He doesn't like what's being served for lunch. I'll get out of here and then mute it. Also, I feel bad about having the worst mustache in the group here. Brad, we're trying to do Mount Rushmore for the Seattle Sounders. I personally believe that there are just two locks, two guys that are absolutely have to be there. Before I reveal mine, who would be your locks?
So I've got Ozzie is number one for sure. I've got Nico. Without Nico, we have no championships. I've got Chad Marshall. He's on two Mount Rushmores. You know, I don't think people remember that he was here from 2014 until 2019. So he was here for quite a while, you know, almost as long as some guys' careers. And he was a proven defender. And then I've got Steph in the back, just longevity and what he's been able to do. You know, we've been watching all these old games. And so I've got to watch Steph now. And you forget about when you're playing with a guy, but the routine saves that he now makes that he wasn't making before, he just makes it look so easy. And so from that respect, those are my four for the Sounders Mount Rushmore as of right now.
Was that in order?
Yeah, I think that was pretty much in order of what I had written down. You know, I thought about this last night, and as soon as you guys popped up, you know, a couple weeks ago with this sort of concept, it kind of got my brain rolling. You know, but I've got a lot of interchanging too with a couple guys for certain circumstances. So,
all right, I'm gonna be a wild card here, and I'm gonna go in a different direction, one we didn't plan for. Where is Steve Zakuani if he never gets hurt?
Oh, easily up there. The thing is, if Steve is healthy and he stays, he's up there. Mm-hmm. But if Steve is healthy and he leaves after 3 years, then he's not on my Mount Rushmore.
Okay, so we have a lot of fans who maybe came to the league in the last couple of years and don't know really who Steve Zakuani was. So you played with him for a couple of years. Like, give us the rundown of what Steve Zakuani was before that devastating injury.
Crazy. I mean, a guy who, you know, we had a call the other day with Darlington, and Darlington even said from his Akron days that even D looked at him and said, this guy's next level, and that's who I want to be. So if you have Darlington Nagbe looking at a guy saying, I want to emulate this guy and I want to do what he's doing, that kind of gives you perspective on what type of player Steve was. He was well ahead of his time. You know, he spent his youth career at Arsenal and then went to Akron and kind of reinvented himself there and kind of took off from day one with the Sounders. The sky was the limit for him. You know, when we played big teams, European teams, you know, their players were giving him a pat on the back. So if you get a chance to dig into the archives, I'd highly recommend it. You know, you can watch highlights or one thing, but to watch Steve in a game and how he was able to isolate and basically just ruin guys' careers. You know, he ruined Evan Brown's career, a guy who won a national championship at Wake Forest. Evan came to the team and had to play against Steve every single day. And I remember specifically Schmetz was saying something on the sideline, you got to stop him. And Evan was like, you come out here and try to stop him. Nobody could do it. He just made guys look stupid. So unfortunate, but you know, he's such a good guy, and you know, sad to have lost that kind of career too early.
Brad, what would it take for Jordan Morris to leap into that Mount Rushmore, and then who comes off?
Yeah, oh man, that's tough. Jordan needs another guy who needs to stay here for another 3 or 4 years. You know, Jordan. When I look at Mount Rushmore, it's not really young guys for me. It's the guys who are tried and true, who have you know, been through the thick and thin. Jordan's been very lucky to have been part of extremely successful seasons, and then you know he lost a season due to injuries. So, you know, I'd give him a couple, you know, 2 or 3 more years, and I think he's interchangeable with Chad at this point. You know, if Jordan wins another championship, I think it's undeniable that he goes up there, and even a supporter's shield. You know, but in terms of impact, you know, Ozzy has to be on there for sure. It's a lock, no matter what happens throughout the history of the Sounders. Nico also, because he changed the course of winning championships, and you'll always remember that. Chad, because of his MLS wherewithal. But I think that one can kind of waver back and forth if Jordan decides to stay. But I think Christian's in that conversation too. I think Christian's right up there with Jordan. The only reason Jordan will get the nod is because he's a hometown hero. But we forget that Christian also spent 4 years, or I think 3 years, at UW. So, you know, he's a bit of a fan favorite in hometown in that respect too.
I'm going to try and direct you in a specific place, but do it casually. What is the best squad in Seattle Sounders history?
I mean, if we had a real chance to win the treble in 2014, you know, we win the Open Cup in Philly, and then, you know, win the Supporter Shield at home. And if you're looking at pure talent and wins, I think that goes down as the best team. You know, and Steve Zakuani's brain is a vault, and him and I do a podcast here, and he always goes back to 2013, and that one gets lost in my head. I think the sour taste of losing in Portland in the playoffs and how that season ended. But we've watched a couple games now that have been really, really good games. And that team was a really good team as well. So my brain, after being here for so long, has to kind of look at past teams. But still, for me, I go back to 2014. Winning a supporter shield is really something special.
Can you talk about that Obafemi?
Wait, Charlie. I was lawyering him. I was working on it.
Okay.
Don't kill my run-up. It's weird. You mentioned 2014, best team, supporter shield, double. And it feels like you, in your Mount Rushmore, you may have left out a couple names that are on that 2014 team, like maybe a guy named Clint Dempsey. And as Charlie put it, probably the best player in the region, if not the league, in Obafemi Martins.
Yeah.
How do you even that out?
Yeah. I think, you know, we recently just did a best 11 for the Sounders, and, you know, both those guys were on there for the past 10 years. And they made massive impacts on the team, but, you know, I think the four guys that I chose bleed Sounders through and through. I think Oba's time was too short to say that he goes on the Mount Rushmore. And Clint was another guy I had that was interchangeable for me between him and Steph. Both guys made massive impacts and got here at about the same time. But Steph's longevity now has kind of propelled him to my Mount Rushmore list. But Clint's undeniable impact on American soccer and what he did for the Sounders too.
So, yeah, I mean, you also have to go back to the cup, you know, like, unfortunately Clint wasn't able to play, whereas Steph had the defining moment in that match. I want to go back to Ozzie Alonso because we've done our all loathe team on Extra Time, and Ozzie Alonso was straight into the all loathe team, which is players that you hate if you aren't on their team or they're not your player, but you love if they are your player. And Ozzie is the definition of that. Give me behind the scenes with Ozzie as a competitor on the training field, as a person, when you're actually on his team.
Number one, he's the first guy you want to go to battle with. That's undeniable. So when you're talking about teammates, number one, he put the jersey before everything. And what you want out of a number six is that he protects everyone on the field. And he did that every single game, no matter if he liked you or not. He was always in the referee's face. He was always in the opponent's face. He set the tone for the Sounders for, you know, a decade. And you cannot say that about a lot of guys in this league. Maybe you look at Kyle Beckerman is the only other guy that I look at that kind of sits in that realm of players for me. So Ozzie, number one, was awesome in the locker room. You know, he was first one to joke around. And, you know, he and I had a very good relationship because we were here from day one together and kind of started and kicked off this, you know, Sounders MLS central midfield partnership. So we had this mutual respect from day one that was undeniable. You know, but ultimately a family man who wasn't going to go out ever. After games, he went straight to his room. He didn't hang out in bars. He never went out at night. So from that respect, he was the ultimate pro. And I can't say enough things about Ozzie, as, you know, he's a top 10 MLS all timer for me.
What's your first memory of Ozzie? Because I remember kind of not knowing who this guy was, and people were like, this is gonna be a good signing, and you'd remembered him from his Battery days, and I think I watched him in the Open Cup and was like, this guy's a monster. Or maybe I was down at one of the preseason tournaments. What was your first sort of experience with him, the light bulb going off, being like, oh crap, this dude's legit?
Yeah, well, my first experience was actually with the Crew. So we did a preseason in Southern California, and Ziggy brought him in as a trialist. And Ziggy had a connection with the Charleston Battery coach, and Ozzie wasn't the right fit at the time because we had myself, BC, Brian Carroll, you know, Stefani Miglioranzi, a lot of veteran guys sprinkled in with two young guys. So I know that Zig saw something in him early, and so did we. I mean, he came in straight into practice, and, you know, it was studs up from minute one. He didn't care who he was around. That's just in his DNA, right? So, you know, and then he goes and spends a season at Charleston, and then Ziggy shoots him straight into Sounders training, and he was a starter from minute one, and he was with the starting group from minute one. I don't think there was ever a question when Ziggy brought him in that was going to be his guy. And that's Schmetzer's type of player too, is that hard-nosed, you know, wearing the crest above everything else. So from that respect, you know, saw him extremely early on, actually. I got a taste before he was even in MLS.
You alluded to both the legendary coaches in Seattle history there. So let's put you on the spot once again. Ziggy Schmidt came from Columbus. We put him on our Columbus Crew observation deck because of what he did there. Built Seattle, won a Sporter Shield, didn't win MLS Cup. Schmetzer has now taken over and won two MLS Cups, which is the one coach for Seattle Sounders.
I think you got to throw Schmetz. I'm obviously, as you can tell, I'm a big longevity guy. And Schmetz has obviously been here since, you know, minute one. And so he bleeds Sounders through and through. Not to say that Ziggy didn't, but if you're talking about long-term, that always resonates with me. You know, I played for one club soccer team growing up. I played for one, you know, university, you know, played 9 years here for the Sounders. So that kind of plays true into my heart. Even though I had Ziggy before, definitely deserves to be on Columbus's observation deck. I think they would love to share time together on the observation deck for Seattle. But if I had to pick one right now, I'm going Schmetz. You know, you alluded to the two championships, but Zig also won four Open Cups, so that's undeniable as well. Hardly any coaches can say that they've done that. So that's tough for me, but I'll go with Schmetz based on previous Sounders experience as well.
Can I just ask, could we do like Obadeuce on the Rushmore? Could we just put them together and like combine it? So that way you
meld
get
them together.
Yeah, you just go Obadeuce instead of having
I mean, that's how they played.
can you talk about playing with those two up top and just compared to, you know, your previous years in the league and then when they were gone, just how dynamic they were and how it, I think for your job and positional play, it made it that much easier for you.
Yeah, I think we talk about it to this day. It was like watching a video game at times. There were two guys on the field and, you know, the rest were basically just in support to get the ball to those guys and do what they need to do. That 2014 year was crazy special. In training, it was almost too easy because the stuff that they did in training really translated into games. And you don't see that very often. I think you see a lot of players try stuff in training, but when they get to games, they kind of back off and they get back to square one. These guys would try stuff in training that was ridiculous, and then they would go and do it in games. And it really struck fear into opponents' eyes, and it made it easy for everyone behind them to play. You know, that was the first year that I kind of bounced around positionally from, you know, right mid, left mid, you know, kind of bounced around everywhere. So I got to see and run the gamut on multiple games and situations. So it's tough. You know, I go down this list. I've got Zach Scott as a possible guy that goes on the Rushmore. Just was amazing. Roger, because he's just so entrenched in Seattle culture here. I put myself on there also as an alternate, just because
it's fair. You
know, we're talking longevity. Yeah. I've got Clint, and then I've got Adrian on there also, because without him, this whole thing doesn't happen. But Adrian and Zig and those guys are what saw Clint and Oba together and made it work. So it was, I mean, you got to play with Clint as well. He just somehow created space for himself that no other player saw. And Oba fed off that as well.
Any good training stories between the two? Any bust ups?
I mean, Clint had bust ups with everyone. I mean, that's not abnormal. I mean, you saw it with, and that's just normal. That's part of his DNA and what made him fiery and feisty, whether it was the referee, an opposing coach, an opposing fan, even, it could get him fired up. You know, Clint would get into it with multiple guys at training. Damian Lowe, I remember getting into it. You know, even Eddie at some points, those guys were boys, but Eddie and Clint would, you know, throw down a little bit in training and get fiery. You know, but that's being a competitor. Right. And ultimately, when you have those situations and players, you know that they got your back in games and what goes on at training. You know, ultimately, if you can handle it in the right way, it doesn't really matter. It makes you that much more feisty. Oba never went into the weight room, I'll tell you that much. I never saw the guy in the weight room. It was insane. And the dude was the most cut, strongest guy on the field. I saw him do two exercises, something with a band around his knee, and that was it. He never lifted a weight, never did a pull up. That really struck out to me. That's
just like David
Goss. These guys are. That's why me and Oba have a similar physique, because we have the same workout regimen,
same body type.
Yeah.
Okay,
We just drive Maseratis and talk and hang out.
Charlie, it's killing me. Whose jersey are you wearing? Whose kit is that?
Oh, the reveal! If you're not on YouTube, you should definitely flip that on. We knew it. It was the two.
Deuce.
Although I thought about pulling out the Mike Fecito. It was very close. The original
legend,
Deuce.
Baby.
The original
Boston
Deuce.
Love right
the
now.
Original Deuce.
The original That's Deuce. Right. Mike Fecito.
I remember early days covering Sporting Kansas City. Mike Fecito was a nightmare for Kansas City back when there was
Kansas
a
City killer, man. The Kansas City killer.
Yeah. The thing that's going through my mind right now after you reminisce on Clint and we see the jersey, and it's the goals and all that, but it's the Open Cup. It's the tearing up of the card. It's the brouhaha. Can you help us take us inside that just a little bit, please?
That was the red card massacre, man. That was a disaster. So, I mean, the game actually started out okay. And looking back on it, that was probably one of the worst decisions Ziggy made, playing those two guys in that game, Clint and Oba, because I think Oba like had an evulsion of his groin in that game. I got a red card early on. Clint got a red card. Like, it was just a disaster. And you're playing at home at Starfire, and if you've never experienced that field, it is literally a postage stamp and the worst turf ever. And we had great success there because we were just used to playing on turf, right? So teams would come in and just be shell-shocked. The fans are sitting on the field, basically. And it was just all around bad. And I got a red card, so I went into the locker room and watched the game on a stream. So I didn't really understand what was going on until a second camera was kind of trying to focus in on Clint. And then I saw somebody tearing up a card, and I couldn't believe it. And I knew what was coming. He's marching through that door. And he actually had a smile on his face. And I was like, where am I right now? What is going on? And then Oba comes in on a stretcher. And I think Mike Azira got a red card that game too or something. It was just an absolute disaster. But it was pretty crazy.
I didn't even think about the wrinkle of you're in the locker room having been red carded. You see Clint gets red carded and he's going to come in the locker room. Half of me would want to sit there and just see what happens. The other half is like, I'm hiding in that stall right over there. Like, I'm getting out of the way. Brandon, all right, last one.
Sorry, Andrew.
Sorry. There's five of us here. It gets awkward on these streams, all right?
No, he's all frozen. Right.
Is he?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't pick that part up. Is he back? Are we cutting this short? Hey, this happens on CNN too, all right? I watched
thought stuff. I was just going to call him out for no reason.
I thought so. I was like, oh, now I feel really self-conscious about that crappy story that I just told.
That's our 30. That's our 30.
Yeah. That was amazing. Because we all sat there waiting for a reaction. He's frozen. And Weeby was like, oh, that really missed the mark.
Brad, I think we've lost you, man. Thank you so much for joining us.
Back, man.
All right, so Brad helped us out a little bit there. Really, I think he's spot on. We like give him, you know, I don't want to make things more awkward than it already is between me and Brad at this point with all the freezing and the eyes. I still am, my skin's crawling still from that. That's who I had Ozzy and I had Nico Ladero as my for sure lock, put them down and then debate the rest of them. Where do you guys stand? Are there more locks than that? Am I discounting the number of locks here? But it feels to me like it's two and then figure it out.
I think Stephen Fry's a lock at this point. He's got like he's been there 6 years now. He's been, you know, a top three goalkeeper literally every one of those years. And he made the defining play in Sounders history. He made the greatest save in MLS history. He's on Mount Rushmore. Like he's a lock.
I'm with you, Doyle. I think he's a lock, but the first two.
He's also the only person who crosses from 2014 Shield to 2019 MLS Cup of these conversations.
That's right.
Because Chad didn't play in 2019. Most Nico wasn't there in 2014. Ozzy as well in 19. So that, and he'll have more.
Okay. Fourth.
You're saying Dempsey. That's where you're going, Charlie?
I'm going Dempsey.
You knew he would because he's a Beckham qua Dempsey man. He just
wait. Why are we not going with Chad Marshall? Is it because we think Brad is wrong, or is it because there is a technicality? Because I'm confused, David. I am confused. I thought we were only allowed to pick players for one team, and we already did Chad Marshall for Columbus.
Correct.
Like we couldn't put D-Row on both Houston, Doyle, and San Jose.
This is soccer. Rules are arbitrary. They are guidelines that we exist within sometimes. But if you're a true pickup player, you know how to handle things when you need them and when you don't. We said coaching didn't count, and we put Ben Olsen in, and everyone knows that part of that was because of coaching. We didn't put D-Row in because he was a hair here or there. Chad Marshall was the best center back in MLS. He was the reason Roman Torres is getting mentioned on Twitter for this because of his partnership. They won an MLS Cup without taking a shot, many because of him, and was there in 2014. Chad Marshall deserves to be on this, and it doesn't get taken away because he was on the crew one as well. We said that as a guideline, not as a rule.
No, but we talked about it beforehand that Chad Marshall was going on Columbus, and he was not going to go on Seattle.
No, because we didn't of that. Say that. We said he had we to did. Be on Columbus. No, we did. Didn't say that. No, we couldn't be on Seattle.
That. David, we said that. Charlie and I are correct.
Yes.
I'm going to add myself onto that side. That's 3-1. Okay. We're all correct.
The guy who doesn't pay attention to anything that happens, Charlie, who's out here doing penalty kick shootouts, and I don't even know if Matt has internet to be able to communicate with people in his little dungeon. Wait,
what? Gosh, why am I not paying attention to anything that happens? I don't even, that doesn't make sense.
You're on the wrong side of this one.
Mm-hmm. You guys are all liars.
So Chad okay, Marshall, so who
is this is how Chad democracy Marshall, dies.
As Chad Marshall, as great as he is eliminated from contention for Sounders Mount Rushmore because he's yes. already a part of Columbus Mount Rushmore.
He's already yes. up there.
So yes. who then jumps in? We have three because I'm with you on the Fry one as well. He has the iconic moment. He bridges the gaps. He's going to be there even longer. So you got to give him the future. By the way, I also agree with Brad Evans on Schmetzer. Siggy got crew. We know where Siggy stands in the history of the Sounders. He's right up there. But Schmetz gets it for this one. So who's the fourth? Taking Chad Marshall out of your mouth, Dave. Do you have another case to be made? You jumping into the Google Doc right now to try to figure this thing out?
No, I want all you of you to respond, and then I'm going to pick someone else just to make it harder and okay. push it to a fan vote because you guys all suck.
All right, all you of you begin.
Yeah, you go with Mauro Rosales then, okay?
Yeah. 2011 newcomer of the year. No, I'm gonna second Charlie's shout for Clint Dempsey. It's not just that he was great; it's that he represented something different in terms of how the league was going to do business. And that was in large part of because of who the Sounders had become by that point. And Clint was the right guy at the right time. And he was a huge part of that best team. He technically was, one 2016 MLS Cup, even though he wasn't on the field for it, but he came back from that heart abnormality and still played pretty well for a year. Clint Dempsey's a legend. And for MLS purposes
as well.
Yeah, for MLS purposes, he's a Sounders legend.
Yep. So, I mean, he's a Sounders legend. I mean, he started the whole U.S. national team mainstay, the top guy. I'm going to come back to MLS, and I'm still going to produce and play at the national team level. So he's got to be number four.
There was a time in 2014 when you could claim that Obafemi Martins was the best player, not in Major League Soccer, not in CONCACAF, but in this entire hemisphere of the world. I don't know that that's even possible with any other player in MLS history. It was between him and Darwin Quintero. Neymar had already left and gone to Europe. There was no one in Argentina that was at that Tevez level, whatever, producing
it. Yeah, I knew you were going to do this, Gus.
You could argue that Obafemi Martins was the best player in the region. He was on a level with Jovinko when Jovinko was in the league, and now we all go Vela and Joseph and all that. Oba was off the charts good as a player, as well as productive, came off the bench, won an Open Cup because he wasn't going to play in Philly. And then it was like, oh, we'll just throw Oba on and we'll win this championship because that's what happens when you're the best player on the field in the league. Okay, and for Clint, it sucks. But for Clint, he missed the only MLS Cup his team won while he was there.
Right. So and for Oba, he missed the goal in literally every playoff game he ever played.
Oh, sorry. I missed the part where he helped set the wins record as the leading scorer and won goals, a double.
Playoffs.
I'm sorry, but if you're thinking Sounders and you're going between Oba and Deuce and what represents the Sounders more, I think it's Deuce. It has to be Deuce. He represented the city in a World Cup and performed incredible well. It's Deuce. He may not have played in 16, but he got up on that dais after they won in the parade and he dropped one on Portland. So I think you got to give it to Deuce.
Look, he's so mad right now. Look at him. He's steaming.
I think you got to give it to Deuce. It's done. It's Clint Dempsey. We've named our four for the Seattle Sounders. You start with Ozzie Alonso. You go to Nico Adaro, Stephen Fry, and then Clint Dempsey. All right, we got to get out of here.
I want quick predictions. If we do this show again in 3 years, is Jordan Morris on this Mount Rushmore ahead of Clint?
If he's still in Seattle and he's still banging goals and they've won a championship or two, yes, I think he
does. Yes, I agree too.
I bet that Christian Roldan ends up on this before Jordan Morris or over Jordan Morris.
Wow. Spicy take 401-206-0MLS, extra time at MLSsoccer.com. Let us know if you have any thoughts on our Fire or Seattle Mount Rushmores or in Orlando City because they're to come on Thursday. That is the roast of Orlando City. I mean, they're Mount Rushmore. Sorry. Can we do one more?
Yeah.
Dave, can I guess a number? Are we letting Doyle guess it? Or, Charlie gets so excited.
Charlie doesn't get anything. Charlie's in the corner.
I'm taking number five because Taquito turned. Well, we've had Taquito for 5 years starting today, and he has been
happy
all
birthday,
over this
Taquito.
Podcast.
Happy birthday, Taquito! And that is
more
a great one for Taquito because it is FC Dallas.
Oh, nice. All right,
I like that.
So we've got Orlando FCD. Guy. So we'll just have Luis Muzzi on and have him do the whole thing
for us.
I'm
missing a good one.
We got some good mail here. I don't think we're going to get to it right now, but I will throw out JD in Orlando. He says, when are you guys going to do Orlando City Mount Rushmore? Well, you have your answer, JD, Thursday. When y'all do it, here are some names of people who should definitely be on it. In his opinion, Phil Rollins, the original owner who brought the franchise from Austin to Orlando and got Orlando to MLS. Well, Phil can't be on it because it's players only. He has Adrian Heath. Well, Adrian Heath can't be on it, but that is a good shout. Heath won some championships in USL. And Kaká is the other ones. For the fourth spot,
absolutely.
He's throwing up Dom Dwyer, Tally Hall, Kevin Molino, Kyle Lahren, Nani,
Christian
Chris Mueller,
Higuita.
Breck Shea he threw on here at the very end. I don't know what to make of that one, but Orlando City, that should be a really, really fun one. That's it for us. Big thank you to Brad Evans for helping us with Seattle. Wait, did we determine the team? Is it 2014? Is that it?
Yeah, 2014.
Okay, I'm fine with that one. And big thanks to Peter Wilk.
Why was it 2014? Oh, right, because Obafemi Martins was the best player in the region.
If it was Obadus, I might agree with you.
He needs a
Not
hug.
Not going to let it go.
Hug.
Thank you to Peter Wilt as well, and thanks to you guys. We'll see everybody on Thursday. Enjoy your week, everybody. Stay safe, stay sane.